24-24 right now. She's obliterating the record.
Alicia Barnall is about to four-peat the only man in history to do it.
Kara Gotcher, she wanted to do this event. It was important to her. Here in Duluth, how sweet it is. Her arm raised in triumph.
Welcome, everybody, to the Gearing Up for Grandma's podcast, brought to you by Essentia Health. I am Zach Schneider, the marketing and PR director here at Grandma's Marathon. We're back with another of our Grambassadors. We've done this with several of them so far this year. Their role with us, quite simply, is to help spread the word, answer questions, and really keep the excitement going ahead of our race weekend in June. We selected about 20 of them, again, to help us promote and talk about the race, but they all bring with them some unique perspective. And today, the Grambassador we have joining us is Carrie Rodman. Carrie, thanks very much for coming on the podcast and welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
It's been a fun experience with this Grambassador program, especially with those of you that have come back year after year for the first couple here to help talk about Grandma's Marathon. We've gotten to know more about you. You've got to know more about us. But first things first, for the people that maybe haven't connected with you in your couple years as a Grambassador, tell us a little bit more about you. When did you start running? What's your experience to date been like with Grandma's Marathon?
So I started running about 20 years ago. I ran my first marathon in 2005. And I think my third marathon was Grandma's. It was in 2008. And then since then, I've run 16 marathons, a couple halves, and some other distances as well. Last year was my first year as a Grambassador, and it was fantastic. The downside was that I had a stress fracture in my heel and was not able to run, but I came up and cheered, and that was a ton of fun. So, but yeah, it's been, it's a great group of people. It's such a fun race weekend. It's such a beautiful course. I mean, everything is great, which is why the day after the race this past year, I booked my hotel and decided I was going to run the full. And that's actually slated to be my first full marathon back since what will be April of 2023. So hopefully, fingers crossed, it goes well.
So you got to experience race weekend last year from a place that no runner wants to be, but it's a unique experience, I think, to be outside the barricade and watching the event happen. What was your experience like as a runner compared to last year as a spectator?
Oh, it was so different, but it was really cool. I was at mile 26, like right at 26. And I'm pretty sure that anybody out there heard me if they didn't see me. The energy is phenomenal. Everybody's so supportive. I think as a runner, I was so new at the time. I was so green. I mean, like I said, it was my third race. I was in my early to mid 20s. And I think I didn't have the same respect for the race and the course and just everything else that you gain with having done it, you know, year after year. But I think the big thing is just how welcoming everybody in Duluth is and how the whole city just like transforms to support the race, which is so cool. Such a fun experience. And I was concerned I was going to be a little bit sad being a spectator, which that ended really, really quickly because I had so many friends up there between Grambassadors and friends throughout the country that I knew that were running. And it was really just a huge celebration. So it was great. However, I do not want to be a spectator again this year. So the goal is to run.
Yeah. We felt bad for you and a couple of our other Grambassadors, and we feel bad for anybody that puts in the time and the work to get ready for race day. It's something that we hope happens to no one. We hope everyone who's signed up for the race can be at the starting line in June, but the statistics of it are pretty clear. We know that there's going to be people in your shoes who, you know, injuries pop up or sicknesses pop up. So we're going to today be talking with you about the two, I guess, three letter words of running, DNS and DNF, dirty words, especially at this point in the training cycle. we don't want to worry anybody. We don't want to, stress anybody out at this point in the training calendar. But your experience last year, you know, while it's maybe not unique because there's thousands of people each year at a race of our size who don't get to the start line for a race that they've worked toward, you have a unique perspective on it, and being able to share that, I think, is important. So what happened? Take us through your experience last year from the time you got hurt to the time you were able to show up on race day, and maybe put some of those feelings aside of disappointment that you weren't running, and be able to enjoy it, from a different perspective.
Yeah. I think, so I found out I had a stress fracture, April or May of 2023. So almost a year ago, 10 months at this point. And at that point in time, they told me that it would probably be 8 weeks in a boot. And I was like, okay, fine. You know, whatever, I'll do that. I didn't do everything they recommended, which I think is why it ended up to be 5 months instead of 8 weeks. So I knew immediately I wasn't going to not go up for grandma's. It's too, for running for me, I think along with so many other people, it's about the community. And there was no way that I wasn't going to not show up. I was bummed that I couldn't do it. And there were a number of races that I missed last spring and in the fall, but I wanted to get back out. And the only way to do that was to actually start listening to my physical therapist and do the things that I needed to do to get back out. But that also meant I wanted to stay connected to my running friends, to the running community. And, I knew well ahead of time. It wasn't something where I got the diagnosis like a week before the race. I mean, this was May. I knew what was coming up. And I knew I was not going to be in any position, to do it. So I think it wasn't a question like, oh, I'm not going to go up there, because it's all about community. That was the big thing. And I'm so glad that I went up there. There's so many friends that I saw, so many people that I got to meet in person, other Grand Ambassadors, and all of those people too. I mean, we're all still in contact, which is something that's huge, especially for upcoming races and especially for people that are coming in town for other things, and us, you know, going out there for grandma's coming up. And it was less than ideal. I definitely was not planning on not running. But I wouldn't have changed it. It was such a fantastic time. And I feel like I actually had the depression that you get after a race, after I was there cheering, which is so funny to me, because you have that leading up to the race where you put in all this time and all this energy, and you do it and you finish it and you're done. And then it's like, okay, what do I do now? And you're like sad afterwards. And that's exactly what happened to me when I came home from Duluth. So then it was just, okay, got to focus on the next thing. And that's, again, when I booked the hotel and registered immediately again.
Yeah. So you had a stress fracture that kept you from doing our race last year, which is pretty black and white. I've known some people that, you know, maybe have denied it or not done a test. We certainly don't recommend that. Our medical people would not want us on here recommending, but there's more gray area for a lot of people. It's a strained muscle. It's leg fatigue, things like that. So, but you've had other experiences at other races. I mean, you run for as long as you have, you're going to run into situations like this. So go back to making the decision, where this one might have been a pretty easy one for you to say, hey, I can't get the race in. But when there's been gray area, what advice would you have for people that are maybe wondering or teetering as we get closer to the race, if they should even try to get through their marathon or their half marathon in June?
I think, I had experience with choosing to DNS a number of races somewhere back like 10 years ago, when I found out I was pregnant with my first child, and I could have done it. And then I was also scheduled to Chicago, and I was also scheduled to do Chicago then, because I deferred the following year. And whatever ended up happening, it was something where like she would have been 4 months old. And at that point, as soon as I had her, I knew there was no way. And the way that a friend of mine, I remember texting her after my second child, and he was born on Halloween. So I knew I was out of Twin Cities that year. I knew I was not going to be ready for grandma's. Like, there was nothing happening there. I remember she said to me, there will always be more races. There may not always be more babies. And that was the thing, that there's going to be more races. Even if it's a bucket list race, there's still more. There are still more starting lines. And I think the big thing is, depending, you know, what your goals are. And at that point in time, I knew myself well enough and I knew my body well enough that I wouldn't have been able to do what needed to get done to make it so that everybody and everything in my life would not suffer. Even more recently, I ran Mesa. I was supposed to do the full back just last month, the beginning of February, and I knocked down to the half when I knew that I was injured. And I thought, okay, that'll give me plenty of time. And then with things taking longer, I emailed them even relatively shortly before the race and dropped down to the 10K. And even that, I was not 100% sure if I was going to be okay with that. But I think I had a decent game plan, and I did a lot of walking, which is something else that there's nothing wrong with that. I know there's a lot of people that say, you know, yeah, if you don't run the whole thing, you're not a runner. And I walked plenty. I mean, even the half marathon in New York that I just did 2 days ago, we walked a little bit, you know, for a number of miles, like every mile. It was my coach made me a promise that I was going to walk a minute every mile. And I did some variation of that. But I think as runners in general, we know our bodies, especially for how long we've been doing this. So taking that into consideration, but also looking at what other goals do you have coming up? Because if you're looking to just like go out and run, which is what I'm doing for this entire year, I'm going to be running. I'm not racing anything. I'm not going for any PRs. I mean, I love being in the back of the pack or the middle. I mean, I'm not even close to the middle anymore, and I don't care. It's mainly just to say, okay, this is what I'm going to go do. I know what my limits are. And I don't want to get to a point where I feel like I have to stop, but if I need to, I will. And I'm fine saying that, and I'm also fine doing it, but I also make the conscious decision that I'm not going to go to the starting line. If I don't think I can actually get to the end, I'm not going to start, because I would rather do it that way and not put my body and my health in jeopardy if I'm not sure if I can do it. So, I mean, I think the big thing is listening to your body, obviously listening to your medical providers, which unfortunately might have one person saying one thing and another one saying another thing. But I definitely had that. And you just have to not listen to who you want to listen to, but listen to what's going to make the most sense for you. But the big thing really is, I mean, for goals that you have for the rest of the year, if you're doing something that might potentially put you at risk for not being able to hit that goal race that you have, you know, whether it's distance or speed or whatever it is, that's going to be the big thing, is, you know, what's going to potentially set you back. And just like at work, I always think, okay, worst case scenario, what happens here if I do A or B? And for this, I mean, I got lucky. I didn't make things worse when I ran on that last year, as long as I did. But yeah, it's just trusting yourself and knowing that you know your body well enough, because that's really so much of what we do, because we are a different breed of like, strong or bullheaded, I guess, as runners. We just kind of, you know, the doctor says, okay, well, go rest. And we say, okay, well, I rest tomorrow. So what do I do after that? And there are a lot of injuries that don't allow that, and it's going to require more. But it really varies by the person and their circumstance.
It's such a mental challenge, I feel like, when you get to that point where you have to start accepting some of the realities of what's happening, whether it's an injury or it's an illness or it's life events that are taking you away from this really big thing for a lot of people. You know, whether it's a marathon or a half marathon, whether you've done a race like that before, or whether you've been in Duluth before or haven't. But I like your story in particular, because obviously we want everyone who's able to be at the starting line. But if you can't race and you can't run and participate, your story of you can come up and support people you know who are running, or you can come up and volunteer, you can come up and be part of the weekend, even though you don't get to be participating in it, I think is a really good transfer of the emotional energy that you've spent, because it doesn't feel, and it sounds like listening to you, it doesn't feel as much like a lost opportunity as it might have had you stayed home last June and not been part of the weekend at all.
Yeah, it really was. And I think some of it too, one thing I always love to do is I love to get pictures. And I've always, even before we had, cell phone cameras, I would always bring my camera everywhere and take pictures. And I got some of the most fantastic pictures of some of my running friends, and they were so excited to have them. And even just to see their faces when they saw me or heard me on the course. And it was so cool. I mean, it really, just to be involved and to be part of it. And again, the community aspect of it is, it's for what the community gives me, it's being able to give back to that as well, because it doesn't all exist in a vacuum. And it's not, we couldn't do what we do without having the spectator support. And I think that's something that's kind of understated and something that we don't always think about. And obviously, I mean, the volunteer support too, we couldn't do anything without them either. But I kind of put the spectators and the volunteers in the same group of, amazing people that come out and really put their time and energy and effort into, trying to help all these random strangers succeed.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. As runners, if you're able to put your disappointment aside, if you end up in that spot to come up because you know how valuable it is to have people at a water aid station, or you know how valuable it is to have people at mile 26, encouraging you on for the final 0.2 miles to the finish line. I mean, those things are so important to us as runners. You have a unique perspective to be able to contribute to the weekend or to the event, even though maybe you're not participating. But those emotions are real, right? And you have to go through them. We know there's going to be more people like you who are signed up, who are ready, who won't be able to be at the starting line. Those emotions are kind of their own arena. And then you flip to the other dirty word of racing, which you go from DNS to DNF, which means that you started the race but can't get to the finish line for whatever reason. And I feel like that's a completely different side of the emotional spectrum than maybe having, even if it's just a week, to try to come to some acceptance that you're not going to be part of this. And now you've got on the bus, you've got to the starting line, you've run the first part of your race, and for some reason, you're not able to get to the finish line. It's never happened to you, but you say that you came close at one of your events. Do you remember the kind of the emotions of that day as you were deciding whether or not to continue?
Yeah, I mean, so there are two races that stick out in my mind. One was probably 12 or 13 years ago. I was running a marathon and had the flu, like influenza symptoms and fever and all that. And I remember I got to mile 6 and I was like, this is not going well. I'm going to just see what I can do. At that point I was gunning for a PR, and that changed really quickly. And I think I ended up being okay. I got done and I thought, well, that was really not that much fun. So I didn't plan on doing that again. The other major, major concern I had, so this past April when I had the stress fracture, I wasn't diagnosed until I think very shortly after I ran Big Sur, which was one of my bucket list races in California. They have a 6-hour cutoff. And I knew at that time, the doctor had said, we don't, know for sure, but if it hurts, you need to stop. And I thought, well, I'm not flying out there and starting at, 5 o'clock in the morning or whatever, and doing all this and then stopping. That's not going to happen. And I remember I got to, as we're going through the race, they have certain like time cutoffs and checkpoints because they have to reopen the highway. And I remember I got to the last checkpoint, I think it was mile like 21 or something. And they start these time frames. It seemed like as the clock starts, not based on when the last runner starts. And I got to that final checkpoint, and I remember thinking like, okay, I'm probably cutting it kind of close here, but I got to that checkpoint and I said to the police officer, is this the last checkpoint or are we? And he's like, oh, honey, you're good. And I thought, oh, that's good, because I only had 11 minutes to spare. And I ended up finishing that race in like, I think 5:35. There was a lot of walking. There were a ton of hills. I had a stress fracture. But all I was thinking was, I do not want to get this far and not finish. But had I gotten to the point that the doctor was concerned about, I would have had to have stopped, because there was no way, it wasn't worth fracturing it all the way through to finish the last few miles of a race. And that would have been devastating at that point. I mean, it would have been crushing. Again, there's always more races, but that would have been really difficult to handle emotionally at that point. Physically, I mean, yeah, that would have been a bummer too, but emotionally, I think there's so much that we don't even necessarily acknowledge that goes into this stuff. And yeah, that would have been a bummer, but I mean, 11 minutes, even my running coach at that time, he was like, yeah, you got me a little nervous there. I said, I made myself nervous there, because it was close, but I got lucky. But I think a lot of it too, though, is I have not put myself in positions where there's a chance that I'm not going to get to the finish. If I'm that injured, if I'm that on the fence about it, it has been pretty black and white and pretty cut and dry. Like, okay, either I'm going to do this and I'm going to pay for it later, and then that's my fault and I should not have done that and I knew it. Or I know that I have other goals that I need to reach for, and I'm not going to do this because I'm not going to put myself at risk. And that's, I think, part of the last 20 years of learning with running has gotten to that point. But yeah, I mean, I got lucky, but I would not have done any of it differently, because it's been a really interesting experience and one I don't want to have again. But even to be able to, like I said, I mean, be a spectator and to change along the way the races that I was doing, and never would have been okay with that in years past. I never would have said, I'm going to drop from the full to the half, or I'm going to drop from the half to the 10K. And it is just really reinforcing that, yeah, we have to be flexible, and, you know, things don't always go the way we want them to. And it is what it is.
Yeah, it's such a layered conversation when you talk about any of these things, the do not start, the do not finish concept, but especially the do not finish group. I feel like it's such a layered, complicated conversation to have, because we encourage people to push through discomfort, whether it's through training or on race day. It doesn't really matter how well trained you are. Marathons are not supposed to feel really, really good at the end of it, or not likely to feel very good at the end of it. Like, there's going to be moments in the race where you don't feel completely comfortable, most likely. And there's going to be things that you have to push through during your training and on race day. The question is, how far can you push, right? And how far can you push your body, your mind on race day? Can you get to that finish line? And the thing that we as race organizers want, you know, other than everybody to get to the finish line safely and healthy, is for people to make that decision when their body is telling them to, right? Because we have medical staff out on the race course that are prepared and ready to help people. But so often we have people that push themselves past that limit, and then they really need help on the race course. And so that is part of when we talk about having a plan for your race. I feel like sometimes it's taboo to talk about what happens if things don't go according to plan, but I think it's important to think about, at what point is it too much, At what point do I need to call it quits and have a plan for that side of the race too? Because I feel like so many people think of themselves crossing the line with a PR or a Boston qualifying time. They think about the success of it, but I think it's equally important to maybe start talking and thinking about what you're talking about, which is when do I need to make the best decision for me on the other end of the spectrum as well?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think too, I mean, that kind of comes back to just because you can do something doesn't mean you should do something, you know, just because, yeah, you can gut it out sometimes. But I think the newer runners are the ones that I get more concerned about in those sort of circumstances, because they don't necessarily have the experience to know when they're pushing versus when they're, you know, doing damage. And I think so much of it is just needing to recognize throughout all of your training, you know, when you need a rest day and you take your rest day, even if it's not your scheduled rest day, because otherwise you're going to end up not getting to the start. And then that's going to be a whole other, you know, whole other concern. I know one thing too, even that we noticed last year where we were at 26, and I remember this from when I ran Grandma's, but the temperature at the start was relatively chilly from when I ran it in 2008. This past year, it really was not that cold, but then as soon as the sun comes out, there's a lot of spots where there's really no shade on the course. So I think that's something a lot of people don't necessarily expect. And you have the asphalt from, you know, the road, and then there's that, and there's the sun beating down, and it just, people get really hot, and they don't have their electrolytes figured out. They don't have their hydration figured out, and all of those things, you know, play into reasons that you might DNF, which is why, you know, like I said, talk about having a plan. And yes, I mean, having an emergency plan is good too, but I mean, to hope that just say, well, I'm going to wing it, it doesn't work. So just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Yeah, it goes back to what all our parents taught us at some point or another. Plan for the worst and hope for the best, I feel like, is a good way to sum all this up, whether it's before the race, during the race, whatever it is. But I do think that it's fun to talk about this with somebody who's gone through it, and it's not abstract. It's something that you've gone through and you've experienced yourself. And so we appreciate you coming on to talk more about it. I encourage people, if you've got questions about what you should be doing, you know, how you can be dealing with this stuff leading up to the race, use Carrie, use our other Grambassadors. If you don't have your own network, a running coach, medical professionals, things like that already in place, these people are here to help answer questions as best they can. So Carrie, thanks very much for coming on this episode. I think it's valuable. And hopefully neither of these things are things that you're dealing with come June. We want to see you both at the starting line, and we hope that you can make it to the finish line as well.
Thanks. Me too, Zach. And yeah, good luck training everybody, and we'll see you in June.
Carrie, if people want to follow you on your social media and keep up to date with your journey to June and maybe want to connect with you further, what's the best way to find you?
You can find me on Instagram, C as in cat, D as in dog, Rodman, R-O-D-M-A-N, like Dennis, no relation. And that's where I do most of my stuff.
Awesome. Thanks very much, Carrie. We appreciate it. We look forward to seeing you here in a couple months. This Gearing Up for Grandma's podcast is brought to you by Essentia Health. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Please subscribe, rate us, tell your friends. Grandma's Marathon, proudly presented by Toyota, Members Cooperative Credit Union, ASICS, and Coca-Cola. I'm Zach Schneider. Until next time, everyone, be well.